It's 2:27 on the planet Neptune, and you're listening to Night Call. Hey everyone, welcome back to Night Call. I'm Molly Lambert, and with me today are my colleagues,
Tess Lynch and...
And I'm Emily Yoshida in New York with our first ever Night Call guest, Claire Evans.
Yo, yo.
Welcome, Claire. And please remember always to leave us a message with a Night Call at 240-46-NIGHT or shoot us an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com with all of your queries.
Claire is with us this week because she has written an amazing book called Broadband: The Untold History of the Women Who Created the Internet. And it's really great, and everybody should check it out. We're going to talk about it in a little bit, but we wanted to talk about a couple of important robots first. Or like two or three
Let's
important
get this straight. Robots first, then women.
Well,
that's the hierarchy of the future.
Look, there's the bread and the condiments, and then there's the meat here. So we're just
classic sandwich order.
Wait, I'm very confused by your metaphor.
Two pieces of bread, then condiments, then meat.
I've eaten a sandwich before, clearly.
This is an open face podcast.
But yeah, this might be a little bit of old news by the time this podcast reaches your ears, but we were very transfixed by news from the Fashion Week in Milan recently of the drone models floating down the runway.
Purse models. They were carrying purses.
Yeah, Dolce & Gabbana had a fashion show for Milan Fashion Week where they let some drones carry some purses down the runway. And then we watched it, and it's really funny and scary.
And creepy. This is all, though, part of a bigger... I mean, it's been, like, kind of a big week for robots.
It's been a big week for robots for robots glitching out, because one thing we were all very into this week was this thing about Alexa, the robot that you order things from Amazon with. Is that what it is?
Or control your home.
Alexa.
I love that we have no idea, because we are all absolutely uninterested in having one of these things in our homes. You have an Alexa, Claire?
I had one.
You had one? Okay.
And that's a past tense.
I boycotted that.
I had one, and then I was so freaked out by it being in my home. I used it only, there was like a sort of text adventure game you could play via speech with it.
Really?
Yeah, they have all
that
these.
That sounds cool.
Alexa with what they call skills, which I think is a rude word, frankly,
yeah.
But it can do all kinds of stuff. I played Jeopardy on it, and then there was like a adventure game where it would be like, you're standing in a wood, and then you'd be like, go left, Alexa, go left, and then Whoa. She'd tell you about gnomes and trolls and stuff, and you would go on a verbal adventure.
Wait,
but then
so
she would start like
this. Yeah, what happened?
You know, it's like I would be watching TV, and then, you know, in the other room, the Alexa would just like suddenly awaken with some, you know, yeah. having misheard something, and she'd just be randomly yelling into the kitchen. And it just, the idea that she was constantly listening, I should have known. I mean,
yeah,
I actually was not a fan. My boyfriend bought the Alexa, and I convinced him after enough of those incidents had transpired that it was time for us to sell her on eBay, which we did.
You know, I feel like we've all been known to sometimes lean into the constantly listening and be like, hey, we know everything's listening already. Let's just like purchase devices and give them permission to listen.
I mean, there's something about omniscience that's kind of comforting, right? Like maybe ultimately in the future, the NSA becomes God, because at least we know that someone is always watching over us.
Well, you've seen there's that meme people do about like the FBI agent assigned to watch me all the time. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Sorry.
No.
I feel like I've seen something
memes.
About this.
It's like people do this joke about like that you just have an FBI agent who's assigned to like watch you through your phone all the time, and they're just like doing some nice things for my FBI agent today to watch. Which I also think
that's
is
funny. Sweet.
It's cute. People but, are like, oh, it's cute that I'm being followed and monitored all the time. Somebody cares.
Well, until it starts laughing
until
at you,
it
which
starts
is what
laughing.
Happened with
right.
Alexa.
As of yesterday, the news came out that Alexa, this is the, what day is it? The 8th that we're recording this today. So maybe this has been totally resolved by the time you're hearing this, and maybe they've like locked up all the Alexas or discouraged them from laughter and joy.
Punished her for laughing.
No, clearly they're going to throw out all the Alexas and replace them with a new one. And then all the old Alexas will just be in like an Alexa graveyard, just like laughing.
Those are the Halloween Alexas that are being saved until the fall.
You say it's like a Black
what
Mirror.
What is it like?
It's like the last Black Mirror episode where the girl's and the woman's trapped in the teddy bear. So Alexa's a real person, a spirit that is trapped in a machine. And the laughing is her way of trying to tell you to set her free. And you can only set her free by like drilling a hole into your skull, I think is how.
Don't do that. The podcast is not advocating for that. Just throw your Alexa away and burn it in a fire.
The thing about the Alexa laughing is that it's the most human sound she makes. It like sounds like a recording of a woman laughing. It's not synthesized. Oh,
that's scarier.
Yeah. I thought that it sounded like Tess a little bit.
Thanks a lot.
Which was very troubling because then it's on top of it sounding like a human. It sounds like a human I know.
For people who haven't heard it, can you imitate the laugh? Because you guys just watched videos of this.
It's more of a cackle is what's weird about it. Like, it's totally a satisfied cackle.
It's like it's dry. Like a real laugh.
It's like, ha, ha, ha.
Or like, I don't know if that's right.
It's like a little bit, it's like, it's like a trickster laugh.
It is an evil trickster laugh. It's not tee hee hee.
Oh, no, that would be very bad.
That's very generous to call it.
Oh, that would be scary. Because
I was imagining like a tee hee hee, but it's not. It's like a ha 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 ha.
I'm scared of all feminized robots.
Why?
Because it's scary. People want robots to be female because they're servile. Because they're like,
but she's so knowledgeable about everything.
But she's still like your assistant.
She's your servant.
She's your servant.
Yeah.
Keeping a phone.
It's just too much noise.
My mom changed all of her Siri voice or her Maps voice or whatever to be the British man voice.
Yeah,
that's what
Colin.
I have.
I just think that they're brand that like Alexa is Alexa and Siri is Siri. Just make it like a genderless robot.
Dave.
This is one of our topics is that robots are not gendered. So don't give them genders.
Well, there is a maybe gendered robot if you pronounce C in Simon or Kaiman, the floating space brain. Kaiman.
We found a mate for Alexa.
Yes.
Simon is a space computer. It's spelled C-I-M-O-N, and it stands for computer interface something something something.
Looks like come on.
Oh, come on. Okay.
But the face does look like the logo for that tutoring company, come on.
Yeah,
yeah, like, exactly.
And it looks like sort of
like that little flat face. Like,
yeah. It looks like that Apple IISI logo. It's like a flatty face on a computer screen. And it's going to float around in a spaceship with astronauts and help them. Like an Alexa, it'll be like, Alexa, like, close the pod doors or whatever. That's just
like Michael Fassbender in the more recent Alien movie.
It'll be does that robot go rogue? I bet it does.
No, it doesn't go rogue at all. It just mostly does normal stuff and hangs out.
He just does what he wants. Is it going rogue when a robot does what they want? By their standards.
There are also like British guy robots because that's the other like traditional like butlers. It's like, you know, who serves people? Like butlers and women. So that's what will make robots be like, ask Jeeves. But Simon, what made Simon sound especially scary was that they were like, they're giving it tapes of the astronauts' voices to learn from and recognize and pictures of their faces.
He's there to study them, too. I mean, I think isn't part of the purpose of his presence on the spaceship is to kind of like observe and try to improve on what's going on.
Yeah,
there,
which sounds so scary.
Super scary.
He's going to turn into a Darren Brown on the space.
Yeah, that's what I also...
Shout out to our last episode.
That's what I was also thinking about Alexa when Claire just said that Alexa tells you to do things. I was totally like, oh yeah, Alexa's going to be like, oh, I totally wrote a
social
short...
Social experiments.
Yeah. I wrote a short film once where a GPS gets you to murder someone.
No wonder you had us watch that show.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Well, you know, people just do what they're told, especially if like an all-knowing robot is just like, no, you have to do this.
Turn left.
I think I speak for all of us when I say that we are incredibly excited to tell everybody about Songfinch. Songfinch is a personalized gifting company that brings stories, feelings, and memories to life through one-of-a-kind songs. So I've told a couple of people in my life about Songfinch recently since it's come to our attention. And they're like, oh, it's an algorithm that writes a song for you. No, a person writes a song for you. This is like bringing back like musical telegrams. It's great.
I've never been more excited to receive anything in my life almost. This was something where we all kind of couldn't believe that we got to do this because it was so fun.
It's the best song I've ever heard.
We're upset. Well, we should tell people about the process, right, that we went through, which was Emily took the reins and did a great job with this.
So there are two different kind of services they have. One is making a song kind of from a preset template, and that's $99. And then there's a $200 one where they build a song from scratch. And so we had a song built from scratch. And the process is very intuitive. You basically go through and answer a few questions about what the occasion is for the song, what kind of genre you want for the song, you know, any other kind of influences or artists that you like. And then you just kind of get to freeform share your story and say, I want to make sure you mention this event or this special memory or this, you know, factoid about a person. And so we asked for a song about Night Call. And we had a song written for us called Night Call. So get really hyped for the premiere of Night Call, written by our Songfinch songwriter, Rich Lowe, who is a genius. He also performed it. Here it is.
Freak you out. Emily got the remedy. Film and music critic, she could be Capricorns or Virgo and Libra. Yeah. We just tell it like it's gonna be.
So yeah, that's our song.
You get it, and it's clear that someone very talented put like a ton of time into it. And then you can read the artist bio, that you get a specific URL where you can download your song, read the lyrics, read about your artist. It was just kind of like a really fun experiment. I think I'm going to definitely do it again.
Yeah, it's a great personalized gift idea for people that you don't know necessarily what to get them. Everybody is happy to get a song that is a personalized song.
We were psyched to endorse it. Also, Songfinch is offering our listeners 10% off of the personalized song from scratch option. So you can visit songfinch.com and use promo code CALL for 10% off your personalized song from scratch.
So yeah, that's Songfinch. Check them out. Tell them we sent you. And you can find our Songfinch song, Night Call, at songfinch.com/stories/Molly-Tess-and-Emily. And you can hear the full version there, which you definitely want to do. So yeah, Claire Evans is with us today. Maybe some old fans of Girls in Hoodies might
deep
remember.
Cut. I'm a deep cut.
Yeah, she's a multiple guest. Maybe I don't know if you were whatever the highest number of times club that you were
I think I hit three. Maybe.
I think you were on three times.
I think it was like two plus a call-in.
Yeah, you were an ancillary Girl in Hoodie.
Oh,
would say that.
I couldn't deserve such a title. I was like a girl in a crew neck.
But Claire, Claire just had a book published called Broadband, and it's really interesting. I just did a Q&A with her at a bookstore here in Brooklyn, but now it is available to pick up at any local bookstore in your neighborhood.
And you can command Alexa to order it.
Yes.
For you. In fact, I mean, I don't condone that, but I think it would be very fun to do at least once.
Well, if you go to a bookstore in the New York or Manhattan area, there might be an autograph in it.
I'm very self-conscious about just promoting the book in general. I mean, it feels so weird to just be like, I did this thing. Buy it, please, on a hardcover for $27.99.
but also buy it. Everybody go buy it.
Please, yeah. God, buy it, please.
That's not that much for a book. You wrote a whole book. I know. We are all very impressed.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Hopefully it comes out to like a really good hourly rate for however many zillions of hours.
Don't think about it that way.
Anyway, my editor was like, go to bookstores in New York and sign copies of the book, because once you've signed it, they can't return it to the publisher. It's nice. Like, it's kind of an inside baseball publishing thing.
It's pretty smart.
But it's so awkward to walk into a bookstore and say, hello, I'm an author. May
no,
I please
you do it like, secretly. Deface.
Yeah. No, you're supposed to tell them.
You go in and then you like slip secret messages in like Phantom Thread. You write little like, I'm watching you right now. Look outside.
Apparently it's a thing authors do, and I feel very tempted to just walk into a bookstore and say I'm, you know, whatever. Like, yeah. Say I'm Ernest Hemingway.
So that I'm Annie Kroll. I'm here to say some.
Claire, maybe we should be kind of your soldiers, and mm-hmm. Molly and I can go sign your books in LA, and then they can be returned to the publisher, and we will have signed them with your blessing.
Yes, of course. I'm happy to franchise my signature. I redesigned my autograph recently for simplicity and style.
It's a very graphical. It's like, yeah. Claire. I am. We are Claire Evans. We are Legion.
Yeah, totally. it's like Prince.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, that'd be great.
I mean, my favorite stuff in the book. The stuff I liked most about it was the stuff about all like the early communities. Like, so I guess after the internet exists, but before. The web.
Yeah.
Which you make like an interesting distinction about.
Well, people don't know. I was talking to someone. I went on a PBS show the other day, and the guy didn't know the difference between the web and the internet. And he was talking and asking me all these questions, and I was like, couldn't get past it. I was like, the web is a different thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of difference, and there's
guys.
There's
what are the differences? As an idiot who's asking you.
No. Please, it's fine.
Please tell me the difference.
You are forgiven. The internet is the infrastructure that underlies, you know, our connected world. The web is like the visual hyperlinked pages mm-hmm. that sit on top of it. So they're related. Like, the web is built on the internet, but the internet is the bones, and mm-hmm. the web is the face.
The internet has been around a lot longer than the web.
Yeah.
I think the reason that a lot of people don't know is because most people's first experience with the internet was with the web.
Exactly.
And not with especially, you know. Maybe our generation was right at that time when you might have done both,
mm-hmm.
but definitely kids who are younger than us.
Well, there's all this in-between stuff, too. I mean, BBSs mm-hmm. and like commercial online services, those aren't really the internet or the web. They're like this weird in-betweeny thing where you're calling into commercial services or you're calling into people's home servers and posting messages.
Yeah.
So there's a lot, you know, it's a big, complex, interconnected system. And,
yeah.
Lots has changed since. It feels weird even talking about the web now, because like,
yeah.
who's even on the web anymore?
Yeah. I
Except
mean,
me.
I'm on the information superhighway. I don't know about you.
Okay. Yeah, wherever it may go, you know, I'm riding it all the way home.
I think my favorite like kind of section of the book is about this community, like this paid BBS community called Echo mm-hmm. It stood for the East Coast Hangout. And it was run by a woman, Stacey Horn, who seemed totally fascinating. And it was, she had been a member, she had checked out this West Coast, like similar community called The Well, that was very like hippie-ish and had a lot of deadheads in it, and like kind of realized it wasn't her scene and decided to start like a New York version of it,
mm-hmm.
which I just love to think about there being like coastal internet.
Yeah. Well, it used to be expensive to call the West Coast internet if you were on the East Coast. Like, it was literally more expensive to dial one of those services. And a lot of the services were on the West Coast in those days. So starting her own service was the only way for her to connect with people online. And then, yeah, like, how cool is it to have an online community that's so specifically localized that mm-hmm. everybody on it is someone that you stand a chance of meeting in real life, and that maybe you also are less likely to troll and harass and be awful to because you know them or you could know them. And,
yeah.
I think that's really cool. A lot of network culture was localized in that way for a long time, for like 10, 15 years. That's the way it was.
You're saying we both miss the times in our lives where we were using the internet and it was like an intermediary thing to like keep, like it was more like a thing to keep in touch with people you knew in real life, as mm-hmm. opposed to like this huge abstract thing or like a way that you kept up with gossip or whatever.
I don't know. I also enjoyed the like talking to people across the world aspect of it a lot. And I very naively always felt like wow, everyone's going to be so tolerant because of the internet, because they're going to like see that, you know, talking, that you can talk to people about whatever you're interested in, and people everywhere are the same. And then instead, fascism was what the internet turned out to also be good for, which, you know, also makes sense. But definitely, I was an internet utopianist, and now I'm maybe less of one.
Maybe geography was one form of creating, like, chill and okay communities, and then, you know, interest specific connection was the other one. Like, you could connect with, I think it's mostly about maybe size, like the size of a community, and when you feel accountable to other people because either you share something that you're passionate about, like whatever, Star Trek or Weezer, which are the main things.
Those are the two main things online.
Yeah. Obviously we all know. Or you know that you could live close to them. Those are the things.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, you're right.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, it was cool to read about this like early internet community run by this woman on Echo that was like, what would happen if the entire community or like the ecosystem online was run by a woman, and like who was conscientious of like, you know, possible pitfalls where there might be like, if there's a conflict or if there's harassment or something, like, what am I going to do about it? And like put in all these safeguards that like these much, much bigger communities that are, you know, susceptible to a lot more bad stuff happening, they don't have that stuff.
Well, they
built
don't
in
care.
At all.
What did she do to make it a safer and more generous space?
So, I mean, the crazy thing about it is that she started this thing in 1989, and at that time, the entire internet / like network culture community, which includes BBS, was like 10% female. I mean, that's not really good statistics, but that's ballpark. And her service was 50-50. Like, she had pretty much almost perfect parity. And it's because she tried, you know, like she actually made an effort to court women online. Mm-hmm.
And like, and also like in real life too, like going to bars and like galleries and
pick
stuff.
Pick people up and ask them why they weren't on the internet and like explain how to use it. And like she taught classes on how to like do Unix in her apartment in Greenwich Village. And then she made membership in her service free for women. The main thing that she did that I think is really smart and hasn't been really done since is she made sure that every single one of the conferences, which is like the individual subject threads on the message board, had moderators, and one moderator would be male and one moderator would be female. And it was like, that was just part of the service, that there would always be a woman in charge in every conversation that you were in. So if you signed up and you saw a woman leading the conversation, you would feel less shy about participating. You know, you would be less likely to lurk. And that's just like a super simple thing, but it worked. It just worked. Like, everyone was pretty much cool to each other. She also made private spaces available, so there was like a women's only area and a men's only area. And it was small enough that people would like call her on the phone to like verify that they were male or female for these individual like message board threads, which opened up a whole question about what do you do if you're a trans user, which is like a thing I explore in the book.
Yeah, that's a really interesting story, also.
And. Yeah. You know, but they were having conversations about, you know, identity, gender, personhood, et cetera, online, you know, 15 years.
And like
years
not in a way, as far as I could tell from your telling of it, like devolved into people screaming at each other. It was like they were just trying to figure it out.
Just trying to figure it out. They were like, talking through it, you know.
Yeah.
And they had a no ad hominem attack rule, which is something that we, you know, people often invoke when we're having arguments online, but no one actually holds to.
No.
But, you know.
Yeah.
They didn't insult each other. They always insulted the idea. And they were totally like, I mean, they were New Yorkers. They were very cynical and they would argue all the time and they were very like self-deprecating and funny. And it was okay because they all sort of respected each other.
Wait, so what happened to this amazing community?
It still
exists. Can I join?
Yes, you can join. Okay. You can join, but the only way you can access it is through the terminal in your computer, and you have to like dial via Telnet into Stacey's home server. It's like super, 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 I say millennial proof. Like, it's old school. It's an old school
internet.
BBS. I've been obsessed with wanting to start a BBS. If you guys are into a little bit of a learning curve, I think it's worth exploring.
I feel like a night call BBS would be the most
appropriate.
Love
that. Yeah.
We don't have to go that far into the past. Just a straight up message board would be so fun, I think.
Man.
I bet you guys were all big LiveJournal people.
I read LiveJournal every day because I read Oh No, They Didn't, which is like the last LiveJournal community alive. But they're great. They report really accurately on sexual harassment and assault scandals in a way that like a lot of other places don't. And everybody in it is cool. All the posters are cool, and they purge trolls a lot.
Do you think that the platform the way that LiveJournal works supports that? Like, is there something about the platform that makes it possible for that kind of dialogue? Or is it just this unique community?
I think
community?
It's just old, and I think it's just whittled down to only the people that, like, care enough to stay involved. It's like one of the mods just retired, and he was, like, had been a mod there for, like, 10 years or something. You know, like, the people that are left on it, it's not, like, necessarily attracting new people at this point, but it does feel this, like, this very sort of, like, the last sane corner of the internet.
So interesting. I keep meaning to download my LiveJournal, but I made the mistake when I was a teenager of making like all of the navigation link colors black on black.
Of course,
so
you
it's
don't.
Really hard to, it's really hard to like get to each individual page and download the material.
What were your guys' favorite message board communities that you were on prior to social media?
Oh, I don't want to out mine because it still exists.
Molly has guarded this secret so carefully.
I've been on a message board for like a really long time at this point, I guess since I was a teenager.
Oh, that's right. I think I remember you talking about this,
but I also
but
like,
I don't know what
I
it
meet
is.
People in real life sometimes that I know from the message board. I was hanging out with my friend Roxy yesterday and I was like, oh, we like technically knew each other on this message board and then met in real life and then realized at a certain point of knowing each other in real life that we had also already communicated on a message board, which is always fun. I definitely like started out with like X-Files, BBS was my introduction to the internet. And definitely a...
I think I started with Prodigy. I was always just a very chatty person. I just went right for the chatting and not so much for the message boards. My parents did have to like disable the message boards though when I was in sixth grade, I think, and I was using my dad's Prodigy account to lurk on hamster boards.
That's doing like the animal?
Like the animal
hamster? Yeah.
I had acquired a hamster and I was a very obsessive kid, so every time there was like an interest, which at this point was hamsters, I would go like really deep. And so I was on these message boards about like how to build these different like tunnels and structures for hamsters. And I ended up eventually talking with this woman who was like in her 50s and lived in, I think, Ohio. And she really wanted to talk on the phone. And it didn't seem strange to me. But when the home phone rang at like 9 o'clock at night and my parents were like, who are you talking to? It was like a woman named Pat, who is like grandmother. And they were like, no. So I was cut off for a bit.
Night Call listeners, if you want to tell us what your favorite message board community or any kind of pre-social media community was back in the day, you can give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT or send us an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com and tell us all about it. We'd love to hear about some internet memory lane. Speaking of, I think we have an email this week that we wanted to read.
So this email comes from Charlie Heller, and he wrote in to say, hey, y'all. First, I'm super psyched that the pod has returned, and it's really great to hear every week again. Thanks for all the great
work.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Charlie.
Please tell all your friends.
Second, after the fashion episode, I thought you might enjoy this compilation I did a few months ago for Food and Wine after I stumbled on Amazon's trove of extremely specific and bizarre algorithmically generated food shirts. I can't even fathom what kind of algorithm would lead to some of these terms being chosen. Like, are there that many people searching for fenugreek or Egyptian bean? But they're really hilarious. I could only include one of each style, but if you go to any of the links, there are tons more equally incredible ones, especially the one with the Pepsi logo that just says lettuce. It may not have become quite the fashion sensation I had been secretly hoping for, but I guess that's just life in the old fashion / algorithm / net art intersection. Best, Charlie. So Charlie had some links in here that hopefully we can attach to the podcast so that you guys can take a look, because it's like he has an amazing
these
slideshow.
Are so good.
Yeah. Are you looking at
these
the shirts
are
right
so
now?
So incredible.
Okay, let's just read some of the shirts out loud. This one is a Pepsi logo and it just says hard boiled eggs. There are a lot of companies like this that just have like shirts that it plugs in whatever. It's like, you know, only real Gloria's know.
Yes, I always get served those ads on Facebook.
Yeah, because they know that you're the kind of person who might buy that shirt.
Yeah.
It's like, only a Claire will understand. Wait, what was that one?
I mean, that is true.
Had? Oh, yeah. Feed me Arborio rice and tell me I'm pretty is one shirt.
Say no to drugs. Say yes to water chestnuts. Always.
Is there like a keep calm and fenugreek.
This one's kind of close. It says soy mayonnaise doesn't ask questions. Soy mayonnaise understands.
I was imagining when we got this email, I was envisioning something like those phone cases,
yes,
where it was like a Google image search of, like, you know,
eczema.
Yeah, like eczema or fennel, whichever, yeah, wherever your interest lies. But these are even weirder because they're like trying to be memes, which is fascinating.
And then the one just says pudding. It has that thing that we like where it is like, it's like a slightly garbled take on something that makes sense. So it like no longer makes sense and your brain is trying to piece it together. Like the one that says, I run because I like Egyptian
bean.
Just the one.
But thank you very much, Charlie, for this email. And we will share the link to your list on all of our social media platforms and or BBSs. It's amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, and we feel like you definitely understand us, Charlie.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes,
we can tell you're
this
a
is
real
very
listener.
Us. So, we kind of had as a perennial topic we wanted to get to at some point, just astrology as a word, astrology in general.
How
but
did
I feel
we get
like
into it. We started talking about it ourselves.
You were saying, Molly, you were saying something about being, you were going to clean, and
oh,
you were,
yeah,
like, maybe I really am a Virgo.
I don't know. It's just like I get in these conversations a lot though with people where it's like, oh, we all know everything about astrology and like what a Virgo is, and we're all like, you know, women of varying like intellectual type jobs, and you know, we're not maybe necessarily the people who would traditionally think we would think of being subscribers to astrology, but here
well,
we
I
are.
I don't subscribe to it. I don't subscribe to it because I have such a boring sign.
Virgo is my favorite sign.
What?
No, it is. And also, you are not a totally atypical Virgo.
Well, I've also heard this before, that there are more Virgos than any other sign because people have New Year's babies.
So, you mean have sex on New Year's?
Have sex on New Year's and then make... There's.
I heard that it was Libras because of Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
I think these are all apocryphal and I just repeat them like one might repeat an astrological thing. I don't know. I'm skeptical of astrology, but I also get mad when people like hate on it because it's usually dudes being like, women are idiots. They believe in this. And I'm like, you fucking watch sports. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, magical thinking is a thing and it's fine as long as you don't invest everything in it, I guess. I guess I get upset when people start spending money on it.
Oh, yeah, and more on that in a minute, because there are two of my favorite stories from the past 5 years have involved people being screwed out of a ton of money by psychics.
Oh, that's true.
Well, when I was an editor at The Verge, I had a freelance writer do a profile of Susan Miller.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, you know, a long, considered piece of writing, like 4,000 words on her. She met her up at like a couple of her conferences and had many phone conversations with her. And, you know, say what you will about the veracity of what she practices, but she is a fascinating woman and like a fascinating internet personality also, which was sort of the pitch of the piece. And so this piece is on The Verge, and Claire also has some experiences with this recently. Verge commenters are like so literal minded in a way that just makes you want to like take a nap for 5 years. It's just, and they were so mad about us, you know, even having the possibility of lionizing somebody who practices a pseudoscience. And it's just like, you're missing the point of this piece.
Also,
it's okay.
I was telling you guys that, like, I think Tess also had, we had our charts done by our math teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have Mr. Gregg?
I had Mr. Gregg.
Yeah.
I was also, it was, I hate to use this word, but it was dumb math.
It was, we both got bumped down to
remedial math.
To remedial math. And our math teacher, even though he was a math teacher, he was also really into astrology.
He was kind of great.
He was totally like a Scoot McNairy in Halt and Catch Fire. You
he
know?
Stole my heart.
So when we found out that he was into astrology, it was like a very fun twist of like, you would not have expected that. And then he did everyone's charts in the class as like an end of the year thing.
It was a treat.
It was a treat. But I also hate when people are like, oh, well, I'm a whatever, so I'm like very whatever.
An astrological superiority complex?
Yeah.
Or an excuse to get out of things where it's like, you can't depend depend on me. I'm a Gemini.
Right. Like, I hate that.
You could also try to be a good person.
Right. I hate when people are like, I'm going to like use this as an excuse for like bad traits of mine that are related to astrological sense. But I also think people that are astrologers, like Susan Miller, are kind of just like confidence men, confidence women.
Yeah.
Like Darren Brown, for example.
Well, she's an artist. She's not a scientist. Right. She's an artist.
But it's like to look someone in their eyes. And we were talking about this recently in terms of people that are like really seductive to everyone, you know, which is like a lot of like actors and actresses. It's mm-hmm. just like someone who like looks you in the eye, asks you a lot of questions about yourself.
Says your name periodically.
Says your name periodically. Makes you
like car salesman.
Yeah, like yeah. makes you yeah. feel understood. Like the ability to con people into believing that you know something about them is like really valuable because people yes. will pay a lot yeah. for that.
Wait, so we know Molly's a Virgo. Emily, you are a Libra. Do you know your rising?
I'm a Libra. Yeah, I'm a Taurus rising, which I didn't even realize till like semi-recently. And I again... all with a grain of salt. But I feel like it explains a lot of my frustrations in life.
Wait, what, Claire, we don't even know where to begin with you. What's your deal?
I'm a Scorpio.
Oh,
I'm
it makes Scorpio so much cusp. Sense.
You're I'm so... the last day of Scorpio. Although I met someone at a party yesterday who claimed she was the last day of Scorpio, but her birthday's the day after mine, so one Wait. Of us is lying. I mean, maybe I have like a moon sign or a rising or something that I don't know, I haven't yet acknowledged and internalized, or that Emily has acknowledged her four Taurus rising, but I...
four Taurus rising.
I often read my horoscope like, oh, I wish, you know,
yeah.
like it's always like you're a saucy minx and no one can get enough of you and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's like that's not
that
me
sounds
at
fun.
All, but I wish.
It sounds more fun to think about than like Virgo, which is like you might clean your bathroom today.
Do you have any least favorite signs?
Wait, Tess, we didn't ask you. We got to get to your sign still. You're evading.
Oh, well, I'm
like
a true Capricorn. I'm very No, we're up front. I'm a it's no secret. I'm a Capricorn.
What's your rising sign?
Gemini.
Oh, that also makes sense. But again, okay, here's my thing with astrology is I feel like if you just list enough emotional traits, everybody right. is like, I'm all those things.
I'm yeah. not
totally.
Well, I think if somebody told me I was a Cancer, I'd be like, yeah, right. This is totally fake. I think that would be one where I'd be like, this is a fake sign.
That's how I feel about being 100%. A Virgo. I'm like, literally the only thing about Virgos is that they're neat.
And no, because you're yeah. loyal, stubborn, right? These are, so you're salt
Who
of the earth.
Who wants to be the virgin?
It's just a woman.
Literal.
She's a woman. She's
I know,
not
but it's like all the other signs are like sexy and passionate and like water and like,
Molly, I'm a goat.
And like dirt.
I'm a goat.
It wants to be dirt.
But it's Saturnine, so you're
I'm a bug.
What I'd really like to do, and maybe night callers can help us do this, is establish an alternate astrology system. I think constellations are really cool. I think the zodiac yeah. is really cool, obviously. I think there are like weird spooky things that happen in my life sometimes that I feel like there are weird, spooky things that can happen, you know? Like,
yeah. You just need, like, something with an ensemble cast of 12.
Right.
Is there, like, a Star Trek, maybe?
What about, like, fruits and vegetables?
Like, a lot of people who are like, it's a fake science. Like, I know, I don't believe it. We shouldn't, you know, pay any money to these people or let them have columns. There are people who, like, totally invest all of their energy into the Myers-Briggs.
Yeah.
Like, they're
yeah.
like,
Social psychology, I believe in. I think is real, but that's yeah. also why I like Darren Brown's The Push, and you guys did not because I was like.
But it's also like it's the Myers-Briggs is a test you take yourself. You can answer it any way you want,
right?
You
and nobody who would answer it isn't that the sociopath test, where it's like anyone who is a real sociopath would know how to pass the sociopath test.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other reason I wanted to talk about astrology was that something actually astrology related happened to me in my life recently, which was that my longtime favorite astrologer that I read on the internet quit the game. And I was unexpectedly very deeply, I don't want to say upset, but it really like shook me in a way that I wasn't expecting. Well, it did kind of feel like somebody reaching a breaking point, or like when you kind of realize that this person you've just been interfacing with because of their public facing persona and the use that they present to like on the internet, that there was actually like so much more going on with him.
Oh, right. That they're not the person you think they are on the internet.
Yeah. Or like
that there's a robot that gives you things every month.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's been providing this service like every week without fail for, you know, 15 years or something like that. And he wrote this like final essay on his site. The site is astroberry.com. He's like a total Bay Area, like just like a total sweetheart. Like I don't know.
Do you think he was on those Deadhead BBS boards back in the day?
It's very possible.
I'm going to go ahead and say yes to that.
Yeah, he's like, I think he's in his 40s. Maybe he's in his late 40s or something. I feel like he could have been around for that scene. He definitely like, I think a thing that happened with him, because he, in addition to the horoscopes, he would write his just like kind of monthly musings on, you know, the planets and his own life and stuff like that. And he got priced out recently of the Bay Area and like had to leave, and he had been living there for a really long time, and it was like very emotional for him. He wrote his final essay about, or his final piece was just like, my computer broke down and I lost my last horoscopes that I was going to post, and like something in me just snapped and I was like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Do you think he saw it coming though?
I don't know.
He's not a psychic. He's an astrologer.
Well, he did kind of put it in astrological context in a way, but like kind of how like we were reaching some sort of end of some kind of cycle or another. I couldn't repeat it. It was just like a bummer to read, because I realized that I had really...
Was it like Southland Tales? Was he just like, well, the apocalypse is starting and...
No, it wasn't so doomsday. It was more just like him making a personal decision for his well-being and his like, you know, out of his own, you know, need for self-care, I guess. There are, of course, plenty of people that we only, like, we feel like we have a relationship with online that we don't even contact or like, you know, get in touch with in any way. And don't know who we are, but it still feels like a relationship. And not even like big celebrities or something. This is just like a astrologer blogger.
Yeah. I feel that way about Adrian, my YouTube yoga teacher, who is my imaginary best friend that I love. But I'm also like, I don't know this person. And the way they present themselves in yoga videos is like a sweet, wonderful, nice person who you would want to teach you yoga. Is not a full person. And yeah, it's very easy to feel close to someone, especially when they're like being a yoga teacher or an astrologer, someone who you're like, I come to you for counsel.
It's important to acknowledge that work, you know, like every once in a while, just drop an email to those people online that you admire that are doing things for you that you're not paying.
But this is the thing I did. You guys, I know we talked about how we shouldn't get conned by astrologers, but I totally did pay for Astroberry's like yearly reports. And it was like this total honor system thing, because it was just a PDF that he would email you, and you could obviously share it with whoever you wanted. But he was just like, he would send it out and be like, hey, you know, like, I know you can technically send this to everybody, but like, if you like it, please just ask your friends to buy it. And so I bought it like a few years, and then he stopped doing it a few years ago. But like, it did make me feel bad that I had never just like I'd never followed him on Twitter or anything like that. It felt like so separate from how I interface, like the rest of my internet activity.
Do you think he was on Twitter?
He was. I don't know if he's going to be doing any.
Give him a follow.
I know. I should. It's give not him a too follow. Late.
Send him a link to the podcast. Tell him
we'll
that
have
you
him
saw
on this
him.
Podcast.
It's like misconnections, but with astrologers.
Tess, have you ever paid for it?
No, I have. But in person, not online. I go for the real deal. And I used to do it a lot in high school. There was
You paid for psychics more, right?
Yeah, it was psychics, but I've also done astrologers. I've done astrological readings at the Psychic Eye. They have like a psychic zone, and then they also do some like, you know, charts and stuff like that. So I've done that before. But I don't know. For me, it's like the kind of thing where I like to get the tools to do it myself. You know, I'm like a DIYer, because I feel like I don't know that much about charts, but there's so many resources where if you want to spend like 6 hours and stay up all night figuring out, you know, all your stuff, all your planets and stuff, you can.
I'm very of two minds.
But if you make a
it.
Mistake, you'll never know. You could be basing your life decisions on some miscalculation.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm totally more of like a, you know, I guess I'm more of a skeptic.
Well, it's different because it's psychics, but there were just like these stories. One of them was in the New York Times, and I sent it to Molly and Emily, about a man named Niall Rice, who was scammed out of hundreds of thousands, like $700,000 or something like that, by a psychic. And he was like having a tough time in life. He was like using drugs and drinking a lot, really depressed. And he went to rehab, met a woman, fell in love, And then they left rehab and dated briefly. And then she went back to rehab and broke up with him. And he was heartbroken. So he saw this psychic and she was like, oh, we'll get her back. It devolved into this thing where the woman died, sadly. And the guy was still seeing the psychic. And the psychic was like, oh, she's dead, but that's okay. You can still make it work with her. She'll be reincarnated as another woman. And meanwhile, taking like all of his money.
Oh my God.
He met a girl, started dating her, believed she was the reincarnated ex-girlfriend. Eventually, his new partner realized this and was like, whoa, no way. Broke up with him. Like, it was crazy. And then... Oof. Then there was another article, I think in Reader's Digest, about a romance novelist named Jude Devereaux. Oh. I think she gave a psychic $17 million. It was like her whole life savings. She gave like, you know, these psychics, it was like a whole family of psychics who had storefronts in New York and then also in Florida. And the woman, Rose Marks, I think was her name, who was heading the operation, she got 10 years in prison. I think that the investigation was called Operation Crystal Ball. But she would just take money from people and be like, oh, it's your money's like dirty. It has like bad juju on it. I'm going to cleanse it and then it'll come back to you later. And everyone was like, okay.
Yeah. Like on the one hand, I'm like, oh, don't give astrologers all your money. But then I'm like proud of the astrologers for taking it.
Yeah, I know.
I feel the same way. Yeah. I'm like, is it really the astrologer's fault at that point? I mean, yeah.
Yes. Well, I think it's usually defended as being like therapy, but therapists can't kind of make that, like, I'll fix your marriage. You know, they can't make false promises. They can only,
Is this the point in Night Call where we decide to start a religion?
Finally.
The night cult?
Yeah. Or, like, a law practice that defends psychics.
Devereaux and Devereaux.
Well, we should take one final Night Call from this week, which comes to us from Lauren, and this is yet another a story I have not heard anything like this yet about, as far as apps spying on us, but let's give it a listen.
Hi, my name is Lauren, and I have a podcast called Podcast Podcast. It's a podcast about podcasts, and I love your podcast. I was listening to you talk about how whether or not our phones are listening to us, and I have, like, I mean, I think this is a pretty standard weird story where I had my phone in my pocket and we were talking about the Rent the Runway's new like subscription service, and I went back to my desk and in my computer it's all the ads I was seeing. I feel like everyone has a story like that, but something weird happened I haven't heard anyone else talk about. I bought my husband a Super Nintendo, like an old one, for Christmas, and my Spotify list of suggested songs the week after was all like, I listened to a lot of hip hop, but it was all like, I can't think of any examples right now, but it was like hip hop songs with like Super Nintendo noises and themes. And I never heard of that before. Like, I bought the Super Nintendo console on Amazon, and then I opened Spotify and there's all these Nintendo songs and they've never played again. I don't know. I didn't even know there were so many hip hop Nintendo themed songs. But I don't know if you've ever heard of anybody with a story like that, where Spotify is feeding put lists based on history. Keep up the great work. I love the show.
God, algorithms are so dumb in a way. It's like this. I mean, if that is true, if the Spotify algorithm and the Amazon algorithm are working hand in hand to oppress this woman, the assumption that just because you like Nintendo, you also like Nintendo music,
yeah.
Like
so
that you just
saying.
Like Nintendo across all media is so
yeah, that you
new
like
interest acquired. Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that's what she's saying here, is that these are like rap songs that have like some production that sound like chiptune. That's what I'm feeling like this must be.
It heard chip music and it was like, you like chip music.
Yeah.
Allow yeah, me to like, suggest.
See, that's what the robot voice should be like. It should be like a nerd, like nerd voice.
Rosie the robot or
yeah not like, let me get you someplace. It should be like,
I mean, it could also be just a zeitgeist thing, though. Like, she decided to buy the Nintendo, and then maybe because it was just in the air that week, you know? I think there's something a little bit more unquantifiable that sometimes happens. Well, or she just noticed it really more.
You know,
more
but they make those ads, they do it. They, like, the way the machines all work together to make you feel crazy and like you're in a Philip K. Dick story is that they make it all like plausibly deniable. They're all like, oh, maybe I wasn't listening to me. I just was doing this and then also doing this. And it happened to know that, you know.
Well, she bought the Super Nintendo for her husband. Like, had she been searching for Super Nintendos online? And then there was her search history for that. But then it doesn't make any sense for
her search history. That's less scary.
Yeah, but then for it to actually like start affecting it after they start playing with the Super Nintendo. I mean, it feels like a really janky and poorly conceived sort of like voluntary Shazam. Mm-hmm. I could see some kind of usefulness for it because I have the thing all the time of like, there was a song playing at this restaurant and it's killing me. I can't remember what it is. And then like, if you start trying to find it, in whatever way, it pops up a little more easily. But this is not anything anybody's asking for, and it's just like picking.
It thinks
up.
It's what helping it? You,
yeah.
But
yeah.
It just wants to help you buy stuff. It's like it's not trying to sell
you another Nintendo, though.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Once you've gotten to the point where the Nintendo music is playing in your Spotify, like what are you going to go back to Amazon to buy a second Nintendo? Or are you just going to
give me more
like,
sounds?
Nintendo.
You're
going to
buy Nintendos until your house is nothing but Nintendo.
Well, they can't harmonize with just one. If you want the harmonies, then you've got to have two Nintendos. Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Alexa.
Like a barbershop Alexa quartet.
Yeah.
To go back to Alexa, to take it full circle, but with the sound thing, I never want to have an Alexa, but like at the same time, before all this stuff started coming onto the market, the only thing I thought I would ever want as far as like a personal robot or like one of these things that you have in your house, I envisioned like a floating orb that would follow behind me and just like play music whenever I requested
Florb.
It. A florb.
That's kind of what Simon is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a floating space
orb. If you look up Simon or Kaiman.
What about a Roomba? A Roomba that's like an iPod. Tess has a Roomba.
Sure,
no, I did. I had a Roomba, and I had the Roomba that sprays water, but they break, and then you're like, what do I do? And it's really hard to get them fixed. They just want you to buy another Roomba.
And then the Roomba that is dying is like, help me.
No, the Roomba that is dying is just like this immensely heavy Frisbee. I had a Roomba now 12 years ago. It was huge, and it was very confused by boundaries and stairs, and and then they break, and at that time, it was impossible to get it fixed. It was, you know, they really wanted you to troubleshoot yourself, and you're like, I don't know where to begin with fixing this thing. I'm just gonna buy a Swiffer, which I did.
Well, thank you very much, Lauren, for your call and giving us another thing to check our preferences on. And thank you, Claire, for being on this night call and being our inaugural guest.
Oh, I'm so honored.
It was fun, and everybody should go check out Broadband, the Untold.
My book.
Buy my book.
If you're listening to this night call, maybe Alexa will start ordering
suggesting the book.
Yeah.
I like that. I like to test to see if things are listening to me by just yelling the name of a product into my phone. Like, I just like to yell leggings at my phone a bunch to see if I get Facebook ads for leggings.
But that does it for this week's night call. As always, you can give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT and leave us your calls about your favorite BVSs, your thoughts on astrology,
ghost stories. I want ghost stories.
Ghost stories. Yeah, give us some ghost stories. Yeah, and you can also send us an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at nightcallpod, Facebook nightcallpodcast, and Instagram at nightcallpodcast. Boom, I did them all. I remembered all of them.
Nice. And
breath.
Also, if you're enjoying the podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe to help us continue to make podcasts for you.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.